Welcome back to Parc Fermé, the Canadian Formula One podcast. My name is Drew, and I'm here with my boy Tomas, and we are going to be dissecting the dynamic twists from the latest race in Suzuka. First, we're going to delve into the high tire degradation at the track and how it played into the hands of the teams that wisely saved their hard tires for the race. We're also going to talk about Yuki Tsunoda and his strategic drive, managing to secure points both at his home race, despite some tough competition and being overtaken by Ocon, Bottas, and Hülkenberg before the red flag. But not all teams had a day to remember. Alpine's challenging season took another hit with both drivers colliding on the first lap, ruining their race early on. Meanwhile, Williams faces some large repair bills and some tough decisions after Albon and Ricciardo's lap one crash. This coupled with Sargeant's FP1 gravel excursion. We're going to talk about how these impact the rest of the team's season. Speaking of, you know, Danny Ricciardo, we're going to question whether his recent setbacks could jeopardize his future in F1, especially with his early exit in Suzuka. And he hasn't matched Yuki Tsunoda's point finish. And so, you know, we're going to talk about Danny Ric's future in F1. Lastly, we're going to talk about Mercedes, and we're going to analyze their struggles with 7th and 9th place finishes. What strategic changes are necessary for them to challenge Ferrari and McLaren for that coveted second spot in the Constructors' Championship? So, Mr. Tomas, let's just do a quick recap of the race. How did you like it? What are your initial thoughts, buddy?
It was all right. It was a pretty interesting race. Obviously, Max Verstappen won again. You know, that kind of took away a little bit of the fun. Overall, it was decent. Sergio Perez came to the bat as well. It was surprising. Ferrari was not too bad. Yuki Tsunoda had everyone's attention. You know, Danny Ric had a lot of people's attention for the wrong reasons. It was a very, very decent race. That's you know, short and sweet. Decent race.
I concur. You know what? I think that this was one of the best races that I can remember in recent history. You know, we can go back to, you know, 6 months ago, which was the last time they raced in Suzuka. And I think that's a good kind of point too, where we can compare apples to apples in terms of like how the teams are performing in relation to like where they were this year at or last year at this time. And so, you know, I think you touched on Sergio Perez there a little bit, and I think that that Checo, this was definitely his best outing of the year in terms of his relation to Max Verstappen. You know, only being a tenth back, sometimes even less per lap. Obviously, over the course of 53 laps, that kind of equated into a bigger gap. But realistically, like, I think this is one of his better showings. And you know, considering his contract's done at the end of the season, you know, this is Checo's seat to lose now. You know, there was a lot of chatter last year about him not even making it to the end of last year, and here he is showing up in a big way to help out Max and Red Bull for their Constructors' Championship. So let's get into it a little bit. Let's talk about Yuki Tsunoda. What did you think about his drive?
Amazing. For someone like Yuki, got my hopes up. Really started to shine the last couple races, really started to shine in my eyes, just the way he's performing. It seems like he's grown, maturity, drive, everything, you know, and I really want him to succeed and get into a better team or a better car. The sad reality is I don't think Red Bull is going to look at him, which it sucks, right? I still, for whatever reason, I think Red Bull is just like, yeah, he's our backbench guy. You know, he's not ready for it for whatever reason. I think that's not fair. And I think if Yuki wants to stay in the sport, he needs to start exploring his options as well, because he's outdoing them. He's outdoing Danny Ric in performance and the drive, and is just wasting his talent essentially being there.
Yeah, I think, you know, this year, Yuki's definitely, you know, started right back where he left off, which was, you know, high performing, and especially in terms of outperforming his teammate. You know, he had a few teammates last year. I guess, you know, my big question and thought is like, you know, what else does Yuki have to prove? You know, he's done everything. Like, he's, in my opinion, extracted almost everything out of that car that he can, especially, like I said, if you compare that to, you know, the other drivers that he's been sitting with. And Danny Ricciardo this year has just been pulling out absolute duds compared to Yuki. And you know, it's kind of too bad to see his talents go to waste at a team like this. But the reality is like, you know, if we stop and think about it, what are we going to suggest that where he goes? Like, is there another option that is better for him? You know, is it a potential for him to go to the Stakes Albert Kick team, you know, for 2025? Is that, you know, to be a co-pilot with Valtteri Bottas? Is that going to be a move? So I'm very interested to see what happens to Yuki. But, you know, in terms of him, you know, showing up for his home race and squeezing out those points, I thought that was an absolute menacing drive out of him. And I think, you know, it was said to mention it in his pit stop, how he thanked his pit crew profusely for that, because they got him in when all four of those drivers came in, and he was able to have a very quick, timely and precise pit stop, which allowed him to get out in front of all four of those drivers and allowed him to do that that two-stop strategy that, you know, saved him a bunch of time. And he was able to make those two sets of hards last for the rest of the race. And, you know, he had to baby them a little bit, but he got everything done that he needed to be.
It was an amazing drive from him. Honestly, it really yeah, it blew my mind. I was hoping that he would show up, but I was not expecting that. So it was awesome. It was really nice to watch.
Yeah, cheers to Yuki and to him in front of his hometown fans. I'm sure that was, you know, one of the best things in the world for him to be able to do. And, you know, I know we're cheering for him to get 10th place and getting a point, but, you know, like we'd mentioned in previous podcasts, you know, the reality is that those little points at the end of the season are going to be worth tens of millions of dollars. So any points that those bottom teams can squeak out is huge. So let's head out to Alpine's garage. Let's talk about Alpine a little bit and their struggles. You know, they did bring a big upgrade this race in Suzuka, and they had a whole new front wing because they're having some troubles with their weight, which is affecting their performance. So they came out with this brand new wing, and everything worked the way it was supposed to, and they were still underperforming. Right, like Ocon and Gasly finished just in front of Logan Sargeant, but, you know, I don't know if that's a feat to be cheering over, because Logan Sargeant's a whole other breed that we'll talk about in a little bit. But, you know, what do you think Alpine's future looks like, at least for this season? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Grim, very grim. The start that they had, man. Like, if we're talking about Alpine and comparing it to Williams, that says a lot, man. They finished behind Logan Sargeant. That speaks volume. You know, going a little bit off topic, I'm still shocked. You know, teams like that are allowed to be in, but Andretti Cadillac, it would dilute it, the sport. You know, it's. I'm still a little bit salty about that. But besides the point, it's not looking well. You know, I don't know what they need to do in order to improve, because clearly the upgrade was not really improving. Like you mentioned, they struggled with weight. How can they bring it down? Well, they can't really. Besides, they can't really bring it down unless they try some sort of a different upgrade. And even then, it's probably going to be minimal. So I think it most likely will come down to driver skill and how they're able to handle those cars, because the last couple races were very, very disappointing from them.
That's a great segue, because, you know what, I think the reality is that, you know, Alpine's drivers are the best part of their team. Like, I think Gasly and Ocon are two of the most underrated guys on the grid. So with all these, you know, driver contracts coming up at the end of the year, do you think Gasly and Ocon are trying to fight for a drive to stick around? Because right now Ocon is outperforming Gasly and outqualified him every race and has outperformed him every single race this year. So do you think that, you know, both of those guys have a future at Alpine, or do you think they're going to try to go elsewhere for a different seat at a different team?
I think what Gasly did leaving Visa Cash App or AlphaTauri or whatever, going to Alpine, I think that was his mistake, first of all. Second of all, the way they're doing it right now, the way the team is performing right now, I would think they would be looking at their options. I don't think they would want to stay where they are right now and being essentially you know, some races, the new Haas finishing last, finishing behind Williams, you know, that's not a great achievement per se. So I would say maybe they're putting everything they got, trying their best, you know, whatever the car has to offer, and hoping they get recognized or seen by other teams. And, you know, someone's going to talk to them or they're going to talk to them. Someone's going to make an offer and they're going to jump ship. That's what I'm hoping. And that's what I think might end up happening.
Follow-up question. Where do you think they're going to go?
I have no idea. There's going to be so much.
Where would you like to see them go?
Gasly. Gasly is a good driver. Same with Ocon. To see them go any team on the grid, essentially?
Yeah, anywhere where there's an opening.
I don't know. That's a good question. Gasly, I don't know why. I would love to see him at a Red Bull. That's probably not going to happen. You know, I know he was in Red Bull a little bit before. He wasn't performing that, but that would be interesting to see him again there. It would be very, very funny if he ends up again in Daniel Ricciardo's seat. He does that switch back. That would be hilarious too, but I don't think that's going to happen.
I think Liam Lawson's got that seat earmarked before he does.
I really hope so, because Liam did show up to the pitch and he did perform. But I don't know. I don't know where I want those guys. I don't want them sticking around Alpine because they're boring to watch, and there's nothing good from that team from the first couple races that we've seen. I'm sorry to say this.
Okay, cool. Well, let's move on. I think, you know, we've touched on Alpine enough, and we beat them up enough in this podcast and a few of our other episodes, but deservedly so. You know, they haven't shown up at all this year, and they've been struggling from the beginning. And even with their upgrades, you know, it has improved their performance compared to themselves, you know, in the previous race. But the reality is they're nowhere near where they need to be in order to be a competitive team on the grid. Let's shift gears and head over to Williams. So, you know, Williams has had some chassis issues, you know, obviously since the last couple of races. And, you know, Albon and Ricciardo got in a crash in their first lap, and Logan Sargeant got in an FP1, you know, gravel hit. And so, you know, what kind of impact do you think that's going to have on the rest of Williams' season? Because, you know, truth be told, they've been shipping that chassis from Australia back to their headquarters in the UK, and then they had to ship that chassis back to Japan and Suzuka. They've now had to ship that chassis back to the UK, and then they got to ship it back this week for China. So I know between the cost of repairs and the cost of shipping that they've almost exhausted their entire chassis budget for the year. So what do you think that has as an implication for Williams in the remainder of the year? And do you think that this is going to hinder them in future developments and bringing upgrades to the car for the rest of the 2024 season?
First of all, I don't even know how they could have such a logistical nightmare with what they have right now with shipping the car back and forth and, you know, missing parts and all that stuff. It's going to be a logistical nightmare for sure. It already is a logistical nightmare. It's going to affect everything on them. There's time constraints, there's pressure on the drivers, pressure on the mechanics, teams, supply, everything. It's a lot of wasted time where I think it could be spent somewhere else, you know, developing the car or improving the car or analyzing the car or the drivers, and it's being essentially taken away in this chassis repair. I don't know how would they even improve besides, you know, not crashing the car or not making stupid mistakes, because, you know, what they're doing right now is just not making sense. They're depleting their energy, their budget, and I don't have high hopes for them. Anytime soon.
Do you think that a driver like Albon and Sargeant, when they're under pressure, because they know that if they crash the car, it's going to cost them and could definitely hurt their car's future, at least for the remainder of the season. Do you think that affects their ability to drive their car to the fullest?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think it not only affects their ability to drive the car, they always have that little voice in their set essentially saying, you know, almost like pressured, like, don't fuck up. If you fuck up, there's chassis damage, like you're fucking over everyone, essentially. So I think they have to be extra careful while driving these cars. And, you know, kind of sucks for Williams, since we, you know, Logan Sargeant's not the best driver on the grid. He has a habit of crashing. So, especially for him,
he's actually the worst. He's the worst driver.
So, exactly. To your point. So it's even more scarier for him to even drive that car, just with what's everything going on there. So yeah, it affects everything. And it even looks bad. I think it even looks bad on the drivers themselves, what they are driving, and if they keep crashing and they can't, again, same thing, comes back to the same point. They can't really perform to their fullest.
I think that the drivers at Williams are going to have a tough time progressing any further throughout the season. You know, the car needs to be developed throughout the year. They learn something from, you know, whatever race they just did. They send those details back and they make modifications to make the car faster in whatever turns and, you know, however they develop these cars. And all of their money, and, you know, with Williams, there's obviously a limited budget there. They're not one of the high spending teams. So, you know, I think it's just really going to take away from the future potential. You know, they're just going to be playing catch up, I think, for the rest of the year, which is highly unfortunate, especially for Alex Albon, who actually has a chance in getting points in any particular race, right? Then I don't want to see it being a lost cause, because I'm a really big fan of James Vowles, and I think he's a great manager. And I just think that they've, you know, they kind of got themselves into a pickle so early on in the season that it's unfortunate, because I think it's actually going to hinder the rest of their season in a big way, unless they find money somewhere.
I totally agree. You know, and like what you mentioned, it would suck. It sucks for Albon, especially because he performed relatively well last season. And now, essentially, he's jumping into a whole new car and he can't perform very well. You know, and he's giving everything he got, and it's the performance is not there. So,
and you know what, like it's that scenario too, where, like, you know, we can assume that, you know, Logan Sargeant's going to crash the car or he's going to do something, and that is what it is. But I think Alex Albon is clearly the better driver in that pairing.
Yeah.
And I think that there's just, you know, things that happen, like when him and Ricardo made contact in the first lap in the second turn, you know, it had nothing to do with Alex Albon, but his car was taken out of the race. And, you know, he hit that wall with not crazy impact, but enough that he was out of the race. And, you know, there was some damage done there. Do you think that there's things like that that are avoidable, you know, by not having Logan Sargeant on the team? Like, you know, Albon's going to have these one-off incidences, but he's not really, you know, the type of guy to be putting that car into walls. But, like, you know, is Logan Sargeant becoming a liability to the point where, like, Williams needs to really think about getting rid of him?
That's a great question. I was genuinely surprised when they renewed Logan's contract for this year. I thought he was going to be done, but James Vowles saw something in him and, for whatever reason, decided to renew his contract with it, which I think was a shock to everyone. Is Logan Sargeant becoming or will be a liability to Williams? 100%, man. Even, you know, he finished last race without crashing, but even then he had a spin out, I think, or he went off track a little bit. So even then, like, he's still making these stupid mistakes, man. And like you said, mistakes happen to everyone, but every single race you have a spin out or a crash, like, come on, that's not a mistake at this point. You're just not skilled. You suck. they need to cut him fast. You know, sometimes I wish these other teams had, you know, Red Bull mentality or Visa Cash App. You know, you're not performing, you have X amount of races. If you're not performing, you're out. You know, there's going to be other people that are willing to take your seat and might even perform better than you. So I don't know what they're thinking about keeping him this year, essentially, because I am almost willing to bet anyone he's going to have more crashes, he's going to have more spinouts, and there's going to be at least, at the bare minimum, one DNF from him this year, at least.
And I think, too, that, you know, kind of on another tangent, I think, you know, with that empty seat at Mercedes and Kimi Antonelli being, you know, the first draft pick right now for that seat, Toto Wolff's been a little bit hush and tight-lipped about it, but he is saying that, you know, Kimi's definitely the number one choice going into next season. Do you think there's an opportunity for Kimi Antonelli to take the, you know, maybe the last half or at least some of the season in that Williams seat for Logan Sargeant? Do you think they would put him in there to get him a little bit of time in an F1 car?
That'd be amazing if they would do that. If I think if Logan keeps on fucking up a lot, you know, they might, Williams might have to sit at a table and really, you know, decide what's worth it. Logan continuing to fuck up for the rest of the season. Or, hey, you know, maybe we give this new guy, new kid, a shot and see what he can do with our car, you know, even get him some experience. Yes, that's a very strong possibility that Antonelli might get a drive or should get a drive for sure. I think he deserves that.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think, you know, as far as the development program that that Mercedes has and you know, their close ties with Williams and pushing the guys through, I think that that's a very realistic possibility, at least for the end of the season. Because I think, you know, that seat, from what Toto Wolff said, has been earmarked for Kimi Antonelli for Mercedes for next season. So we'll see how that develops. But let's move on to the other party in that Williams v RB Cash App crash, which was Danny Ricciardo. You know, we questioned last week whether his setbacks could jeopardize his future in F1. And, you know, given his early exit in Suzuka, you know, do you think that he was, assuming that he finished the race, do you think that he could have pushed Yuki Tsunoda, or do you think he would have ended up in the race, you know, finishing further down the points than Yuki did?
I don't think he would have been able to challenge Yuki. Same, you know, it almost seems like he has that energy, same as Valtteri Bottas. He doesn't care, or, you know, he just doesn't want to perform, or he lost confidence. After this race that we just had, I don't see him sticking around in F1 any longer. You know, he might, I don't know if this is confirmed or not, but, you know, like the ultimatum, like three or two more races left to decide this future. I don't know if that's confirmed, but if it is, you know, maybe it's good.
This was one of those. So yeah. Let's hope that that's not true, because if he had, you know, two or three late races left and, you know, he's out in the first lap, second corner, that's not a good look.
Exactly. So just by seeing this, it's like we talk last in every podcast, we want to see him succeed. We cheer for him. We love him. But man, the cold, hard truth is, if you're not performing and if you're doing stupid mistakes or not pushing the car the way he is, not performing, not really pushing the car, there's no future for you, man. And, you know, you could argue, you know, he's not in the best team and whatnot. Yeah, but neither is Yuki. And Yuki's outperforming him almost in every way. He's done. In my eyes, he is done. I don't think he's going to recover unless he pulls a miracle out of his ass, which, again, I don't see that happening.
You know, based on his quality performance and what he looked like in FP1, I thought that Danny Ric looked good for the race. Like, you know, I think that something in him has kind of triggered a little bit, and he was able to get that confidence back. And unfortunately, the, you know, looking over his left shoulder when he should have been looking over his right shoulder going into that second and third turn at Suzuka kind of ended his race a little bit early. And that's super unfortunate, because, you know, like you just mentioned, I think that Danny Ric is a great personality to be on the paddock and, you know, in F1, and we all love to see him, and especially on Drive to Survive. I think he's the hero on Drive to Survive, but I don't think he's got a lot of race left in him. You know, I hear a lot of excuses and I don't hear a lot of solutions, right? Yeah. Like, you know, oh, you know, they were talking about over-engineering the car, and, you know, it was the same stuff that he was talking about at McLaren, and, you know, he's singing the same song again at RB, and I don't think he's running out of runway. The runway is shortening and shortening for Danny Ric, and, you know, especially with someone like Liam Lawson nipping at his heels, that it's just kind of like, it's too close. And I think that Liam could put a little bit more attention back to RB in a positive light, because I think right now they're getting a lot of attention and it's not the one that they want. And, you know, like you mentioned, Yuki's been outperforming Danny Ricciardo since he got in that seat again. You know what I mean? There might be one or two one off, but I just don't think that that Danny Ric has what it takes to outperform Yuki in any fashion. And that's that's not what RB and our and Red Bull's about. Yeah. You know, they want people that'll push each other, and this should be going back and forth and back and forth. And, you know, I guess the same argument could be made about a team like Alpine. You know what I mean? Because, like, you got Gasly and you got Ocon, who are both great drivers, but, like, Ocon's been outperforming Gasly all season. You know what I mean? And I know it's still early. We're not even a quarter way through the season, but, you know, from my humble opinion, I think that Ocon's outperforming Gasly, and I think that, you know, they have a better chance of finding a future in Formula One, where I think Gasly's kind of falling to the wayside a little bit because he's struggling with that that Alpine car, and I think that Danny Ric is struggling in that same way.
And it's really weird how like the younger drivers per se, or the more junior drivers, are outperforming the more senior drivers. It should be the other way around. And so something is not clicking with Danny. Something is not clicking with Gasly. And like you said, you can't really blame the car for both instances. Something with their performance is lacking, whether that's confidence or you know, they're afraid of their teammate, almost, essentially. Like, they think their teammate is, like, after their seat, which in reality that might be true, but that should give you more fire to fight for it. And it seems like it's just getting to their head and they're almost giving up.
I think it's an adaptability factor, right? Like, I think, you know, Lewis Hamilton is guilty of this himself, right? Like, Lewis Hamilton has not been able to adapt to this new Mercedes car as well as George has, right? And then you have a younger driver like Yuki Tsunoda being able to adapt faster to this car than, you know, the older pairing of Danny Ricciardo. And then, you know, when Liam Lawson comes in, also a younger driver, he's outperforming Yuki, right? And then you have, you know, somebody like Oscar Piastri, who I would argue is in some ways been outperforming, you know, Lando Norris. So I think these younger drivers have this ability to kind of get into a car, and instead of being mad at the car and saying, build this car to fit the way I drive, they're able to get in it and be like, oh, okay, this is how to extract the best performance out of what I've been given. So I think there's a lot of an adaptability portion of it that makes sense to these younger guys coming through the ranks that maybe some of these old guys, you know, that old dog, new tricks thing, right? And so some of these older drivers don't have that ability to kind of make adaptations on the fly. But, you know, speaking of Mercedes, now that we're in that, let's talk about them struggling. You know, they finished seventh for George and ninth for Hammy. And, you know, I think their strategy call was the right one. Like, I think they saved their hard tires for this race, which ended up being the right call. I don't know if their execution was there. And even with the upgrades that they've brought this year, you know, I'd heard that Toto Wolff said they're finally at the fourth race in the season. They're finally at the point where they should have started the season in. So they're kind of starting the season on their back foot, which is unfortunate, because then you have the likes of McLaren and Ferrari, and obviously Fernando Alonso in that Aston Martin, you know, outperforming them all the time, right? And so, like, I guess my question for you is, like, what kind of changes do you think they're going to need to make in order to even almost be competitive? Like, do you think that they, at this point in time in the season, have a shot at competing against Ferrari and McLaren and even Aston Martin at this point? Obviously, I think because, you know, Lance Stroll isn't in the points as consistent as George and Hammy are. So I don't think that Aston Martin's going to be fighting them in the constructors. I think they will beat them. But I think personally that Mercedes should be in that top position behind Red Bull. Like, they should be in the second seat, and now you have Ferrari running away with it and McLaren looking like they're doing a much better job on a consistent basis. Like, you know, do you think that Mercedes has that ability to bounce back by this point in the season?
I think it is too early to tell is the short answer, but, you know, they have been struggling for what now, 2-3 seasons. You know, they're not really performing where they should be. You know, you can blame it on the car. The strategy is there. I'm going to say, for the most part, the strategy is there. The team, you know, is good on that part. But something with the car is not performing. Lewis was having a lot of trouble. So was George at points. The upgrades were either coming a little bit, you know, too late, as you said it, you know, they brought out the upgrades where they should have started this year, come on, man, that's a step backwards, I should say. You know, it almost seems like it. Can they compete with like Ferrari and stuff and Red Bull? I don't think so. From what I'm seeing, again, it's a little bit too early to tell, but I don't have high hopes from them, especially what you said. Alonso's outperforming them, man. McLaren is doing really well too. You know, Ferrari's on the whole new level. Red Bull, we're not even gonna talk about Red Bull, but unless they pull again a white rabbit out of their hat, I think they might be even behind Aston Martin this year, just from what I'm seeing so far.
So, you know what, let's take a jump over to the Ferrari team for a second, because, you know, Ferrari has been, you know, over and above Mercedes, over and above McLaren, over and above Aston Martin consistently this year. Like, they are looking like the clear number two for the year. Do you think that Charles Leclerc is the number one driver at that outfit right now? Like, do you think that Charles Leclerc is the better of the two drivers? Because if you look on paper, he's not.
You know, I'm glad you asked this question, because I like them both as drivers of their personalities. But in my eyes, even before everything was announced, Mr. Carlos Sainz looked like the smarter, safer, better move on Ferrari's part. And when they decided not to renew his contract, you know, I'm not even going to talk about Lewis Hamilton, how he got this seat, but when they decided not to renew his contract, I was kind of shocked. The way he's performing this year, and holy shit, man, he does not, it's almost like I do not give a fuck mentality. Like, there's a fire that lit up in him. Maybe it's just something that happens. You know what? Like, you fired me? Okay, just watch. Watch what I'm going to do now. And he's just on it, you know? And he's now maybe, and I really hope Ferrari is thinking to themselves, man, have we done the right move? You know, maybe we should have signed him on for another year or two. You know, Hamilton maybe could have waited. But they rushed it. And, you know, from the last couple of years, their strategy, you know, we are all making fun of their strategy and saying the strategy shit during the races, but I think their strategy during the races improved, but their strategy with the drivers right now is a little bit of a clown show. I don't think that was the right move. I think they just wanted a high popular name in that seat. And then, you know, it kind of worked out for Lewis too. You know, Mercedes wasn't performing, and here's another shot. And, you know, Ferrari offered him some crazy perks, crazy opportunities. But no, Ferrari did not make the right call between Leclerc and Sainz. Sainz is way better in my
perspective. I'm going to defend Ferrari here for a minute, because Ferrari does have Charles Leclerc signed until 2029. So he actually has the longest contract out besides Max Verstappen, who's a 2028. So they've committed to Charles. So, you know, if Ferrari was going to make a move, Carlos Sainz was the only option, right? And when you have somebody like Lewis Hamilton knocking at your door saying, hey, I want to wear red next season, you say, yes, Sir Hamilton, anything you want. And so, unfortunately, you know, even if Carlos is better on paper and has been performing, you know, as an absolutely amazing quote unquote second driver, he had to go, right? They want the clout. They want the attention that Lewis brings. And so I think, you know, it was more of a case of circumstance than anything that Carlos had to go. But what I think that Carlos is doing right now is setting himself up for any seat next year. Like, he can literally go into any seat next year and take it. I think even Checo's seat. I think that if he wanted to knock on Red Bull's door and say, hey, I would be a better second driver, they would take it. Now, whether or not Max would let that happen, I doubt it, because I think he'd be more competitive against Max Verstappen. So I guess let me ask you this question then. Carlos Sainz, where do you see him going next year? Because I think he's going to be the driver to talk about. There's 12 drivers up for renewal in 2024. Where do you think Carlos Sainz is going to land now that the season's kind of played out a little bit? I know we talked about it briefly earlier, but now that, you know, we're a little bit further into the season and Carlos has continued to perform at a high level, where do you think he's going to go?
I see him going to two teams, either Mercedes or Aston. It would be very interesting if he would end up at Mercedes. That would be a fun switcheroo. Chances are it's not going to happen. Now, if Fernando Alonso leaves to Mercedes, and if Mercedes takes him, and if he goes to Aston Martin, that'd be very, very interesting too. Do I see him ending up at Red Bull? Like you said, possibility, but highly, highly unlikely. I just, you know what, personal opinion, I just cannot see him in a Red Bull suit, racing suit. And besides what you said, I think it would be very, very competitive with Max, which would be a good and a bad thing, obviously. So I would think it would be either Merck or Aston Martin Racing. That's where I see him going. I don't see him going anywhere else, honestly.
I think Mercedes is going to go more future oriented. You know, originally, like, you know, all fun and games, I really wanted to see, you know, Fernando Alonso jump in that seat for one or two seasons. But I think if Fernando is going to be making a move anywhere, it has to be a front running team, because he's not going to jump into another sideways move where they're performing almost equally as Aston Martin. Do I think that, you know, someone like Fernando Alonso could extract more from the car than somebody like Lewis Hamilton or George Russell? I don't know. Maybe he could perform a little bit better in the Mercedes he's given. But I just can't imagine Fernando Alonso jumping ship anywhere else for a mediocre seat. He just wouldn't do it. And I don't foresee Lance Baby Stroll going anywhere, right? Like, I think that with Daddy running the team, he's not going to go anywhere, which means there's going to be no seat for Sainz unless Fernando Alonso's gone and retired. And I think, you know, like I'd mentioned just briefly before, I think Kimi Antonelli is going to be the seat, or the driver for the seat for Mercedes, because I think they're going to start gunning for the future. I think 2025, if it ends up any way that they've, you know, kind of landed right now in 2024, it's going to be silly season for them, and they might as well get this kid in some F1 experience before the rules and regs changes in 2026. So I don't know, man. It's a very interesting situation, and I'm, you know, I listened to Toto Wolff kind of talk about the driver pairings, and the drivers are starting to heavily talk with some of these teams right now, and contracts are going to get signed in the next few races. And so I think that it's going to be very interesting to see all this plays out, because as one driver starts announcing that they've been signed with teams, we'll have a better idea about where things are going to piece together. But I think right now there are so many choices and options for these guys that we would just be kind of, you know, blindfoldedly throwing darts at a board. And then, you know, we can do all of these predictions, the if ands, you know, until the cows come home. But the reality is we have no idea. We have no clue at all. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of wrapping it up. You know, did you have anything else that you wanted to talk about?
Just kind of a side note, you know, while speaking about signs, I know Audi's coming into play too. That's another possibility for him. I don't see him coming. I don't see him going there, or if he does go, that would be quite shocking, because new team essentially coming in, so you don't know how they're going to perform. Other than that, I don't have anything else to add. Looking forward to their next race, and more great entertainment, and more results, and hopefully some contract signings, like you said.
For sure. Do you have any shout outs you want to do? I know we were talking about it in the Discord. I want to shout out my boy Victor. We got my boy Mike Zanin. I know he's a constant listener. We got Deshaun. We got a couple of the dudes out in the Discord channel to give them a shout out. You got anybody you want to give a shout out to?
I'm just going to give a shout out to my main guy, Mr. Lucas. He's a big supporter of our channel too. He watches, he listens. So thank you so much, Lucas. I appreciate it.
We love that. We love that. The Park Ferme fam. I get down like that. Well, that's it for this week's episode. Like, subscribe, please jump in the Discord. We have all the links in the show notes. So please take a look, share the YouTube. You know, it really helps with the algorithm. We really appreciate it. And next week, hopefully we're back with the full crew. We're going to have Walker in house. We're going to have Ed in house. And we're really looking forward to it. So that's it. Ciao for now.